You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to OK Sis Podcast.
Hi sisters, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Scout.
And we are sisters IRL.
I'm the older one.
Yes, Scout, we know.
We're cultural observers.
And of curious minds.
Get ready for sisterly banter while we chat about fixations, learnings, and personal growth.
We promise it'll be a good time.
As long as you don't get too loud, Mads.
Welcome to the sisterhood!
Hello, my fellow bibliophiles. It is Mads. And here we are on month 7 of the OK Sis Book Club. Hopefully, if you're listening to this, you have read While We Were Dating by Jasmine Guillory, which is October's book club pick. But if you have not, do not worry, because I'm going to quickly summarize the book before getting into my conversation with Jasmine herself. As you may know, the OK Sis Sisterhood has joined Geneva, which is an amazing community app where we share all of our book recommendations, get updated on the latest book club pick, and share thoughts on recent reads. I will be posting some discussion questions about While We Were Dating for all of us to connect virtually. There are so many brilliant women in there, so we'd love to have you in the community as well. The link to join can be found in the show notes and on our Instagram link in bio. October's book club pick is While We Were Dating by Jasmine Guillory. Ben Stevens has never bothered with serious relationships. He has plenty of casual dates to keep him busy, family drama he's trying to ignore, and his advertising job to focus on. When Ben lands a huge ad campaign featuring movie star Anna Gardner, however, it's hard to keep it purely professional. Anna is not just gorgeous and sexy, she's also down to earth and considerate, and he can't help flirting just a little. Anna Gardner is on a mission to make herself a household name, and this ad campaign will be a great distraction while she waits to hear if she's booked for her next movie. However, she didn't expect Ben Stevens to be her biggest distraction. She knows mixing business with pleasure never works out, but why not indulge in a harmless flirtation? But their lighthearted banter takes a turn for the serious when Ben helps Anna in a family emergency and they reveal truths about themselves to each other, truths they barely shared with those closest to them. When the opportunity comes to turn their real-life fling into something more than the Hollywood spotlight, will Ben be content to play the background role in Anna's life and leave when the cameras stop rolling? Or could he be the leading man she needs to craft their own Hollywood ending? All right, without further ado, let's get into today's discussion on While We Were Dating with Jasmine Guillory.
Hello!
There we go. Hello! How are you?
I'm good. Wait, let me turn the... Oh, there we go. There's construction outside, so I'm trying to minimize any outside noise.
Don't even worry. We get it. You're a busy gal. Also, like, your whole archive behind you, this is incredible.
Thank you. It is the one thing that I've managed to keep like spotless in my apartment during the pandemic.
I love it.
I quickly realized I needed some sort of background.
And you're like, you know what? I'll share the many, many romance novels that I have written. Okay. First, I'm delighted to be speaking with you because I'm kind of fangirling over here.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
You are romance novel royalty, okay? And, you know, one of the contemporary romance authors that is truly paving the way for this genre. And obviously, we're here to talk about While We Were Dating, which I literally consumed in two sittings. It was so consuming and amazing. But I wanted to start off talking about the romance novel genre in particular. So, you know, I will admit, before I started getting into romance novels, there's this, you know, association that they're kind of like chick lit or somehow inferior to other genres. And then when I was introduced to books like yours and Helen Huang and Christina Loren, and I felt this incredible escapism and beauty and love and just delight. And romance novels suddenly took on this whole new meaning for me. So, and it's definitely thanks to writers like you who have been shaping these stories and bringing, you know, joy to readers. So I want to ask you specifically, what excites you about this genre and where it's headed?
You know, I mean, the things that I love about romance are that they're stories that really center women. I mean, I think, you know, yes, there, this is not to say that there are not like stories about men and non-binary people in romance, but the pleasures of being a woman are celebrated in romance in the way that they are not in so much other literature, you know? And I think that is very specific to romance. I think in not just literature, like so much other media, being a woman is sort of a something to make fun of and a downside, and like men will make fun of the women in the room, and or they, and there's often only one. Like romance, that's not the case. Like there's lots of women in every book, and her successes and her joys and her pleasures are things that are important to the genre and to the books. And that makes such a big difference for me. And that's what I love about writing romance.
I completely agree with you with, you know, placing the female pleasure and empowerment at the forefront. It's something that's often ridiculed and downplayed. And I think specifically with romance, when I started reading it, I was enamored with how much, you know, empowerment I felt as a result after, whether it's, you know, sexually, whether it's, you know, in my career. There is this common theme in the romance novel genre today where it just feels a lot more empowering to women. And I love that. So what's your relationship with romance novels? Like, have you been reading them for a long time? How did you fall into this?
Yeah, it's been a sort of on and off throughout my life thing. I first really started reading romance when I was in summer camp, but I can't remember if it was like, maybe it was somewhere between 7th and 8th grade. I can't, it was somewhere around there. And my roommate that summer like brought a whole bunch of romance novels with her. And so I read a bunch of them then, but then I didn't like read a lot until like much later in life. I think, you know, I tend to read like the books that my mom had around the house, and my mom didn't really read a lot of romance, or the books that I read when I went to the library. And at that point, you know, I was like reading a lot of young adult and stuff. And so it wasn't really until like I was in my 30s, I think, that I kind of went back to romance. I was recommended some books by a few people and then read a few and then just sort of dove right in. And I think I kind of shortly after I really started reading romance again, I was going through a really hard time in my life. And I think romance novels are great for that because like going in, you know, there's going to be a happy ending. And like there are really times when we need that. And I plowed through romance novels, you know, in those next few years. I was like reading a ton from my library or anything I could borrow from friends or, you know, anything I could like find online or whatever. And that was really what like sort of got me back into romance for good.
Yeah. It reminds me of something. I also had Christina and Lauren on the podcast, and they had said something about, you know, people think that writing a romance novel is easy because it's, you know, just butterflies or whatever, and there's this happy ending at the end, but it's actually harder because you have to go through this tension and this journey throughout the entire thing in order to get to that happy ending and get that satisfaction. So it's kind of like the readers know it's going to end a certain way, but how do you kind of create that journey to get there? And it's especially while we were dating, I did not see as many of the turns that you placed in there, especially with the moment that Anna was going to kind of manipulate Ben to fake this relationship. I really didn't think she was going to tell him. I also did not think he was going to be okay with it. Like, I thought that was the end of the book. Like, okay, he's going to get mad and then they'll get back together. But there was this amazing insight into who he was and the type of, you know, distractions and things that he kind of went through with his life and this self-awareness that he had. But first, I want to talk about Anna and her anxiety. So we discover in While We Were Dating that she deals with a lot of anxiety due to her rise to fame, and she's a bit ashamed even to tell close friends and family. And on this podcast, we obviously talk a lot about mental health and destigmatizing the conversation around it. So why was that important for you to include anxiety in Anna's story?
I mean, you know, I wrote this book during the pandemic, right? I had planned to start writing it. I kind of already knew certain things about the book. It changed a lot from what I kind of knew at the beginning, but I had planned to start writing it in March of 2020. I always like kind of take a little break between books. And so that, you know, I had sort of my break in February. I was going to a writer's retreat. I was the writer in residence at a writer's retreat in March. I was like, this will be the perfect time to start outlining it. And then I will start writing on April 1st. I like to give myself like deadlines to start. It helps me. And then like that writer's, like the day we all got to that writer's retreat was like the day the world all fell apart. Like we're all sitting around a dinner, like sitting outside in California. It's beautiful. We're drinking wine and chatting and someone looks at their phone and it's like, the NBA just...
I think something's going on.
Oh my God. Broadway just shut down. Tom Hanks has coronavirus. Like it was that day, you know, where everything. And so I was frozen that whole weekend. And I just sort of like made myself try to like journal and like brainstorm a little bit about what I was going to do for this book. But I really like couldn't really think about it. And so I did not start writing on April 1st, but I made myself start writing on May 1st. Cause I was like, well, you know, you have to do something here other than like sit frozen in your house and like scroll through your phone. And at that point, like all I could think about was mental health. Like that's what we were all talking about. That's what we were all thinking about. Everybody was anxious. And so it just felt natural to have that as a part of this book. And I also think like, it is sort of funny to me that it took 6 books for me to have like an actual therapist character in a book because my whole family other than me are therapists. And so they were like, finally, but yeah.
I love, I mean, talking about therapy, we find out that Ben is in therapy and Anna, you know, praises him because of this, you know, cultural shame around Black men and therapy. Why was that something you wanted to, you know, dive into and shed light on?
You know, what's funny is that was sort of accidental because Ben was a character from one of my previous books, The Wedding Party. His brother was the main character in that book. And at one point in that book, his brother says something, he's sort of complaining about his brother and says like, my brother always talks about going to therapy. And then when I was writing this book, I was like, oh no, I already said Ben is in therapy. I have to figure out why. But at that point already decided on that, Anna's anxiety and all that. And I was like, all right, well, I guess we're going all in with mental health in this book. Like it just sort of, I mean, it was accidental, but it all kind of made sense when I really started thinking about it. And so it was really kind of fun to kind of dive in to those therapy scenes and think about like why Ben had decided to go, but then also what he was still holding back.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I empathize with him a lot in terms of the distractions and the, you know, sweeping things under the rug and kind of, you know, not confronting things head on. And it's interesting because I've been in therapy for a long time, but I still see those patterns. So it was interesting for him to go through this experience, but then he was like scared to tell his therapist things, which I also feel that. It's like, I don't want to, you know, disappoint her. And so I want my therapist to like me. There is all those types of themes around therapy, which I felt so connected to. The book touches a lot on inclusivity and representation in Hollywood specifically. Anna is a Black plus-sized actress. And she has to work, you know, 5 times as hard to make it in the industry. She's ruthlessly ambitious. So it makes sense that she is so, you know, driving towards this one role that she wants. And it's just, you can feel it in her whole body that she's like, this is something I have to work 5 times harder to achieve and get. And I will do anything to get it. Why this injustice that Black women face in Hollywood? Like, why make a whole book about it? And have you had certain conversations around it with other Black actresses or things of that nature that it kind of inspired you to do this?
You know, I sort of actually backed into that also. I mean, I think because I had been as a character in a previous book and I knew I wanted to write a book about him. And so I was really thinking about who would pair well with Ben, like what kind of person, what kind of character would I sort of put up against him, because he is a very strong character and I knew he would need someone who would sort of like challenge him in a lot of ways. And that's how I thought of Anna. Like I was like, oh, she's gonna be famous. Like it has to be someone who's kind of a big deal and a big personality. And so once I decided that the main female character of this book was gonna be an actress, then that all had to obviously be part of it. Because, you know, if she was going to be a Black woman in Hollywood, she was going to have to deal with all of this. This was going to be a part of her life. And so, you know, I have like sort of paid enough attention to, I mean, partly paid enough attention to what goes on in Hollywood and partly like this is, you know, what professional Black women deal with in for everything. And so I knew it was going to have to be part of her story. And so like that just sort of fell into place as soon as I kind of figured out exactly what kind of character she was. I knew that was going to be an element to the story I told about her.
Do you have a real celebrity in mind that you based off of her or no?
The other day, my cousin looked at me and asked if I got a treatment in my hair. I said no, but I am taking Nutrafol. You see, sisters, I had some shedding issues postpartum when it came to my hair, so I made it my mission to support my hair growth and strengthen my hair. I mean, Mads, you saw my hair last time I was up in LA, and you even complimented me. Which, sisters, you know that when Mads compliments me, it's a big deal.
I do have to give this one to you, Scout. Your hair is looking thick, strong, and beautiful. When it comes to hair thinning, it's complicated. The problem is, it's actually much bigger than your hair alone. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health, and internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and grows. Nutrafol's whole body approach multi-targets underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker and stronger hair.
Every morning after I eat breakfast, I take 4 pills, and it becomes a seamless addition to my morning routine. But the reason I decided to go with Nutrafol when supporting my hair health is that Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. Oh, also, Nutrafol makes the best Mother's Day present, especially for new moms. The perfect way to show them that you care about their postpartum support.
Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code OKSIS. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code OKAYSIS. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code OKSIS.
No, I can never think like that. Like, I always kind of, as soon as I come up with a character, I can kind of picture them in my mind, but they're always like a little bit of a lot of different people. I mean, I did pay attention, obviously, to so many of things that Black actresses have talked about. I read, you know, memoirs and stuff like that. But Anna was very much her own person.
I love that. Okay, so we had to talk about the sex scenes. I can't believe we, like, spent this much time and we haven't even mentioned them. So what I noticed specifically with your books is most romance novels, there's obviously a tension building and it builds up to like this one miraculous sex scene at the end, or like two at the end. You obviously don't subscribe to that philosophy, which I love, because there were so many sex scenes just throughout the entire book. But something I love about them is that each one serves a purpose. It's not just kind of like thrown in there just because, you know, it really does serve a purpose. So what is your process for writing these, and how do you make them not cringy or cheesy? Like, there is just such an art to the way you write them. And then time and time again, each one feels so different, but it, again, it progresses the story in such a beautiful way.
Thank you so much. I think While We Were Dating definitely has the most sex scenes of all of my books, which was not really intentional, but I mean, I think it all sort of goes back to the characters, right? Like, I write each scene for who the people are that I'm writing about. And so this was Ben and Anna's story, and this is kind of the way that I had to tell it. And once I kind of figured out who each of them was and what their relationship would be like, it only made sense to tell their story in this way. And so every time I write a sex scene, it's really about who these characters are and why they're coming together in general, and why specifically they're coming together in that moment. And that really helps me kind of figure out exactly how it all happens.
Yeah. I mean, there is the whole theme of using sex as a distraction, kind of tying back to the mental health. It's interesting because both of them struggle with this like distraction type of, you know, coping mechanism, but Anna challenges Ben to get out of his shell, and then Ben challenges Anna to get out of his shell. But then I'm, you know, especially when I think about that drive to Palm Springs that they do in the very beginning, and she, you know, opens up about her anxiety and tries to, you know, downplay it or whatever. He's like, no, 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 don't do that. And that's not how it works, to shove things under the rug. But then I was like, wait, but Ben, you're doing that. Like, why are, and it's this interesting play on, with our loved ones, with our friends and family, we give them advice that we probably can't take ourselves and that we can't internalize. Was that a decision you made? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think like Ben and Anna recognize themselves in one another. And so they understand each other very well. They're just not good at taking their own advice frequently, which I think is true for all
exactly.
of us.
Exactly. It's so true. Okay. So I want to do some rapid fire before we wrap up. I say this is rapid fire, but then it ends up just being like a whole other discussion. So take that with what you will. What does literary success look like to you? Is it, you know, the number of books that you've created? Is it the community? Is it the, you know, rise in fame? Like, what specifically about literary success intrigues you?
You know, I've had to really think about that because I think so much of what other people think of as literary success is something that you yourself have no control over, right? Like the number of books you sell or getting on this bestseller list or whatever, none of that is under my control. And so for me, I think success is like being able to keep writing books and feeling good about everything I write, you know, like being proud of every book I put out into the world. And so that is really my goal for my career, is to be able to keep writing and to be happy with my writing.
I love that. And I think just with how many books you've written, it's just, how do you keep it fresh, if you will? Like, how do you not fall back into certain like tropes? Or is there, you know, do you have like a little list of like all the like romance novel tropes and you're like, okay, this one I'm gonna, you know, tackle next? Like, because there's obviously so many, but it's, you know, how do you continue to freshen up on each book that you write?
I think partly I do try to give myself breaks, which has been really hard over this, you know, past 18 months, because it's been hard to take breaks from anything, right? Like,
right.
But I think writing can get overwhelming at times, like, because you're just sort of in that bubble and that's all you think about. And so being able to like get out into the world and get a fresh perspective on life and people, because I think at core, like books, especially romance novels, are about people. And so I want the people I write about to feel new and fresh every time. And that, I think, is the key, more than like writing in a different trope or going to a different place or whatever. It's making sure that each character feels like a real person. And that's the thing that I really try to work on.
Love that. Okay, what is a book either you read recently or even, you know, in your whole reading career that you feel like was underappreciated or didn't get as much like recognition as you believe it should have?
Let's see. That's a great question. One that I read this year, or did I read it this year? I mean, I don't know. It all blends together. But one that came out this year that I really loved, it was Honey Girl by Morgan Rogers, a romance novel about a woman in her 20s who is sort of graduating from grad school and really trying to figure out her life and like has the accidental Vegas marriage. But it's really the opposite of the kind of book that you think of with like that starts with the accidental Vegas marriage. And I found it so touching and lovely and thoughtful. And I really love that one.
Love it. Okay. Adding to the list. All right. How do you select the names of your characters? Do you have like a little baby name book or something? Or is it just like things you experience in the world?
So it depends. For the two main characters, I have to really come up with their names before I start writing. And so I usually kind of go through names and think about it and brainstorm. And then I will kind of sit on them for a while and like look at them and think like, are these two names ones that I want to live with for the next, you know? And then once they feel right, then I can really start brainstorming the book and writing. Because at that point, I already know a little bit about the book and the characters, but I need to like, does this name fit with who I want to write about? But then for like side characters, sometimes it's just like, oh, this sounds right. And I grab it. And then later on, I have to fix it. Like my second book, The Proposal, I had a different name for Nick's boyfriend who proposed to her at the beginning of the book. I had a different name for him for like most of the first draft. And then I realized that it like was different. It was not right. And I had to like go back and change it. But so sometimes like as I'm writing, I think like, no, that name does not fit the character that I'm writing about. So there's a lot of brainstorming going on. Sometimes I will text friends like, what's a good name for, you know, and we'll come up with something.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, you mentioned something about and we talked about it earlier, that you always include a character from another book of yours. And it doesn't necessarily, it's not like a sequel and it's not, you know, a through line. So you can read them out of order. But what was the strategy behind that? Why did you decide to do that? I mean, obviously, when Nick shows up in this book, I was like, wait, I know this girl. And so it's kind of a nice little nod to your past stories. But is it just something just to kind of bring it all together? Or what was the strategy there?
You know, it was not a lot of strategy. It was not. I mean, it was for most of the first like three books, you know, for when I wrote The Wedding Date, there's a scene that happens like about a third of the way through with the two main characters who end up being the two main characters for the wedding party when they like kind of first meet on the page. And that's when I knew that I wanted to write their book. And then I knew I wanted to write Carlos's book. So like that, I kind of all kind of figured out as I wrote The Wedding Date.
Yeah.
For the others, they all, it was just like, I wrote a character and then I was like, I want to write a book about this person. And then it all just sort of flowed from there. But it definitely was not on purpose that I wrote six books that are all.
Yeah, I can imagine if you're creating this world and creating these characters, like you fall in love with them, you feel comfortable with them, and then you kind of, you know, expand on their story. It makes total sense. What did you edit out of While We Were Dating?
You know, surprisingly, very little. Like this, While We Were Dating was probably my tightest first draft of all of my books. I tend to write like long, sprawling first drafts where I edit out like 30,000 words. And this book, I didn't really. I think I figured out who Ben and Anna both were pretty early on. And that really helped me figure out a lot of the book. Like there were certain scenes that I changed a lot of, but I didn't like kind of at the beginning, there's always a lot of I'm fumbling my way through and kind of figuring out the characters. And so there were certain scenes that I think I wrote early on that I don't even remember because I sort of wrote them and I was like, yeah, that's not right. But I kind of had to write something at that point and move on. But then I got about halfway through and really understood the book. And so then there was a lot of like fixing and tightening, but not a lot of editing stuff out, actually. I was really worried, and you're talking about the sex scenes, I was actually worried that my editor would want me to cut with some of them, because I was like, there's a lot of sex in here. Is she going to be okay with that? But luckily, she did not.
I love it. I know. My philosophy is the more sex scenes, the better. I think it's great. I also had Helen Huang on the podcast, and she was like, the first draft of The Heart Principle was basically porn. Like, I just had to, like, edit out, like... I was like, why did you do that? That's really rude. Like, give us the first draft. Okay, what was your hardest scene to write?
The last scene.
Okay.
Ending this book. So I really psyched myself out is what I did when I was writing the first draft of this book. And like the second half of the first draft flowed really fast. And there was a point when I was like almost done with the first draft where I thought, oh, I really should never have thought this. It's messed me up for months. I was like, oh, in all of my other books, the last line, when I write it in the first draft, has stayed the last line. Never should have realized that, because then I wrote the last scene and I was like, nope, no, that's wrong. That's terrible. It's bad. And then I tried to fix it. And I was like, nope, that's still not it. And then eventually, I don't recommend this as a general strategy, but it worked for this. I was like, because I knew that I was just psyching myself out of like writing this last scene. And so I was like, I just have to get a little drunk and write it so that I stop overthinking it. And then I did that and I wrote the last chapter and I was like, all right, okay, that's better. And then I read it when I was not any drunk anymore. And I was like, yes, you're right. That's better. And that ended up being the last chapter. But I didn't come up with what the actual last scene is, the epilogue. That was originally supposed to, I did not have an epilogue originally for this book when I turned it in. And I didn't come up with the epilogue to it until like right before I turned in edits. I was like, I'd been working on edits for the book. I was almost done. And then like a tiny thing that both my editor had said and then one of a friend of mine who'd read the book had said all sort of came together in my mind. And I was like, oh, and I wrote the epilogue. I think I was like about to turn in the book and I wrote the whole epilogue in like, I don't know, 2 hours. And then like spend a day of fixing it and then turn it in. But the end of this book really was the thing that came slowest.
Yeah, I'm trying to think like what the book would be if we didn't see that epilogue. I mean,
yeah, no, I love it. I really felt like in the end it was perfect for the book, and I'm so happy with it. But it took a while to get there.
For sure. And it's interesting because the whole time that we, you know, we realized that Ben and Theo have a sister, and, you know, the book was getting towards the end and I was like, wait, we haven't resolved, you know, this part. So, but I'm glad that we didn't have to see them meeting her. I don't know if that was necessarily necessary for us to see, but it was more so the coming to terms with the fact that he finally told his brother, like that was more of the moral for me than actually seeing the meeting. But yeah, the epilogue was so beautiful because you see the four of them, you see this, you know, there's such a support system for one another. So it was a beautiful way to end it. But I did love the ending of the real part, not the epilogue, where he's like, let's go for a drive. Like, oh, just my heart. It's like a little flutter, you know. I love it. Okay, what is next for you, Miss Jasmine Guillory, romance novel extraordinaire? Are you working on something else? What can we expect?
My next book is by the book. It comes out next May. It will be published by Disney Books, and it is a Beauty and the Beast retelling.
Wow.
Belle's story. We have Black Belle, so I'm very excited about it. Julie, this is a series that Disney is putting out that's like contemporary retellings of princesses. And so Julie Murphy did the first one that was Cinderella. And so this one is the Belle story. So I'm very excited about it.
Oh my gosh. Oh God. Okay. That is going to be incredible. We're so excited for that. Thank you so much for doing this and being here. Can you tell everyone where they can follow you? I mean, you're a great Instagram follow. I'm just going to say you're delightful.
So much. I am on Instagram at Jasmine Picks, and on my website is jasminegillory.com. And I update, well, not as often as I should, but with book information and lots of other fun stuff.
We love it. All right, sisters, you can follow us at OKSIS Podcast, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do you ever feel like you're struggling through motherhood? You're not alone. I'm Erica Jossa, host of the MomWell Podcast, therapist and mom of three. Join me each Wednesday as I sit down with guests, including psychologists, pediatricians, psychiatrists, fertility specialists, lactation consultants, and more, to unravel the myths of motherhood. With expert advice, practical tips, self-love, and some coping skills to help you along the way, you can become the mother you want to be. Listen to the MomWell Podcast at momwell.com/listen or on your favorite podcast platform.